Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk joins us at his usual time and spot at Pro Football Talk on Twitter. I'm Connor McKnight. Rich Campbell in for Dan this morning. Plenty of storylines as camps are opening all across the NFL next week. Mike, thanks for taking some time for us today. Great to talk to you as always.
Hey, great to talk to you guys. How's everything?
Wonderful.
Good.
The NFL Players Union pushed back a little bit with a tweet and a statement, or a statement in a tweet, about the NFL, the NFL's anthem policy. I wasn't surprised that it happened. I was, frankly, a little bit surprised that it took this long for it to happen. What is the next step as those two entities try and mete out some sort of compromise on a policy that was not a compromise to begin with?
Well, the NFLPA actually waited until the deadline for filing a grievance arrived. Under the CBA, they filed on the last possible day. I think they understand the potential PR consequences of being perceived as anti-flag, anti-military, anti-country. So I think they tried to tread lightly. They tried to work with the NFL privately before it got to the point where they filed the grievance, and they hope to continue to work with the NFL moving forward. And that's what should have happened from the get-go. The moment that Colin Kaepernick was spotted sitting during the national anthem in August of 2016, the NFL, which created this mess by poorly drafting the policy that says players must be on the sideline but should stand, they're not required to stand, but they should stand, the NFL should have engaged the union at that point and said, let's fix this. They didn't want to do it because the NFL didn't want to make a concession. So now, after the NFL has unilaterally changed the policy, the NFL apparently has an obligation to work with the NFLPA, and that's what they're going to try to do. And the leverage for the NFLPA is, if we have to take this to a grievance, we're going to end up potentially winning because the NFL had no right to change the policy without talking to the union.
So, Mike, the union obviously took some care at the end of that statement to highlight the fact that these discussions with the league or ownership are ongoing. You think those discussions lead anywhere productive? What do you expect might come out of those?
Well, you know, it all comes down to whether or not the NFL wants to give anything up in order to make this happen. Will the NFL make a concession? And the problem is, if they would have made the concession back in August of 2016, because this is how bargaining works. You sit down at the table and you talk it through. Hey, NFLPA, we'd like to have a policy where all the players agree to stand for the national anthem. And the NFLPA says, okay, what's in it for us? August of 2016, it would have been a lot cheaper for the NFL than it's going to be now. Right now, it's going to be very expensive for the NFL to make this happen because it's become such a big issue. It's such an important topic. And so it means more to the union to give up the right to protest, the right that the NFL gave them to protest. That's what it comes down to. So we'll see how reasonable the NFL is willing to be. We'll see how reasonable or unreasonable either side is willing to be, and then maybe they can work something out. And ideally, that would be the best outcome. A situation where all players choose to stand for the national anthem, and to make that happen, they're going to have some alternative way to bring meaningful attention to the causes important to them. And I don't know that all players would still agree to stand for the national anthem, even if the NFLPA comes up with a blanket agreement that that's what's going to happen.
Do you think the union has leverage, though?
I think the union's got plenty of leverage because if this goes forward with the grievance, then an arbitrator may very well say, sorry, NFL, you can't just change the policy regarding the national anthem without bargaining with the union. So it goes back to the old policy where players can be on the sidelines, can kneel, can sit, can protest during the anthem, and there's nothing the NFL can do about it.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, joining us here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You've gone back, Mike, you know, twice now in just a couple of minutes to when this started, what the ownership group and what the NFL should have done. I think that's an interesting way of looking at it because I wonder if they'd have started then to work together with players, whether you'd have, and perhaps the NFL just doesn't care that Michael Bidwell is tweeting out his support of a politician, of a Supreme Court justice, through team letterhead. Maybe they just don't care about the blowback on that, but they might not be getting the same type of it if they'd have sat down in the first place. You think that's a fair assessment of the situation?
Well, that's right, because look, politics is part of football, and as much as the owners want to say, take the politics out of football, they want to take politics out of football on their own terms. I mean, politics inherently is part of football. The moment you make players props in this effort to wrap the shield and the flag. That's how they got into this mess in the first place. It used to be like it is when you go to a college football game where they play the national anthem and then the players enter the field. They're not out there for the anthem if you go to a major college game. 2009, the NFL changed the policy, and that's when they created the poorly written policy that has this loophole that lets players protest. So the NFL politicized the anthem in 2009, and Michael Bidwell, with an article on the team website, I mean, and let's take a step back. Who the hell cares what the Arizona Cardinals owners has Arizona Cardinals owner has to say about whether or not Brett Kavanaugh should be a U.S. Supreme Court justice?
Like, I agree.
I mean, really, why does he even wade into this morass? Because it's not going to change the outcome. You know, it's not going to be when it's time for the deciding vote in the Senate. It's not going to be, you know, John McCain out there with his hand in the air, and instead of putting his thumb down, he's going to put it up. Hey, Michael Bidwell went to bat for this guy. It's just stupid to complicate these issues, to create the perception of hypocrisy. And I think the only reasonable explanation for it is, Will did it because he can. And it's a reminder to the players and everyone else who's boss. And in the NFL, the owners are the bosses.
So, Mike, even just looking through the website right now, you go down the headlines, LeSean McCoy, Marcel Darius, you know, legal problems all the way down. This is June, this is July in the NFL right now. Sticking with McCoy, what do you make of this situation right now?
Well, look, I mean, all we know is what's been alleged and what the basic circumstances are. But you've got a former girlfriend living in a house that LeSean McCoy owns in Georgia. There are some sort of legal proceedings aimed at getting her evicted from the house. There's jewelry that he apparently bought her that's in the house. And somebody shows up and robs the house only of the jewelry that he bought and beats her up in the process. And the allegation from her lawyers, they don't come out and say it, but it's pretty clearly implied between the lines that LeSean McCoy, even though he didn't do it, he orchestrated it. You know, this is the kind of thing that could spiral out of control very quickly for LeSean McCoy if there's an aggressive effort to get his cell phone, to get access to his email accounts. Because, you know, I could envision, if there's any truth to this allegation, there's a chance that this was some sort of a Fargo-style caper that went haywire, that, you know, he wasn't supposed to beat her up. He was just supposed to go get the jewelry, and one thing led to another, and it all went out of control. And if that's the case, I think it's going to be pretty easy to piece this thing together digitally. And I think that's one of the things that has to be going on right now. The NFL is already reportedly talking to the authorities in Georgia, talking to the woman's lawyers. And, there's a hell of a paper trail electronically that we create all the time. And I think that has to be examined first to determine whether or not there's anything to this. And if there's anything to this, I don't see how LeSean McCoy survives it as an NFL player. I mean, the pictures were horrific, and the circumstances and just the idea that something like that, he'd have responsibility for it. I think he'll be done in Buffalo, and he'll be done anywhere else.
It feels like the third act of a Law and Order episode where Chris Maloney finally gets his guy. I wonder, Mike, as camp opens for the Bears next week, there's a ton of local interest in how Mitchell Trubisky develops with his offense, with how Coach Nagy works and develops individual position players. Nationally, though, across the league, where are the Bears in terms of camp interest for you, and what one camp maybe has more interest than anything else heading into next week?
Oh, I'm very intrigued by the Bears because they fall into that fairly small category of teams that we don't know what to make of them. You know, with a lot of teams, it's like, well, they're supposed to be good, they're supposed to be bad. The Bears, I don't know what to make of them. You know, there's that DNA from the Chiefs and Andy Reid and from the Eagles and Doug Peterson and Mitchell Trubisky entering year two and the first opportunity he's had to be the wire-to-wire starter through the offseason program and training camp, and he didn't have to worry about sitting behind Mike Glennon. I think the Bears, if they could come out and steal a few games early and build some momentum, they could be a factor in the NFC. The problem is the NFC is extremely top-heavy, and I guess the one training camp that carries the most intrigue because it's going to all play out on TV is the Cleveland Browns. I mean, for a team that was 1-31 over the last 2 years, the amount of optimism that is hovering around that organization right now, it's stunning. And so many people, like, look, you look at some of the odds out there for the futures bets to win the Super Bowl. The last I saw, the Browns were 75-1 and the Bengals were 125-1. I mean, are you kidding me? They've won one game in 2 years. So I'm curious to see whether there's any real indication that this infusion of talent is going to make a damn bit of difference for the Cleveland Browns in 2018.
That's interesting that you mentioned that type of optimism. That exists here in Chicago. I'm curious, Mike, how you feel like the Bears are regarded league-wide, you know, from that zoomed-out perspective?
I mean, I think league-wide they're looked at as just a non-factor, cannon fodder, whatever the case may be. NFC North, you've got the Vikings, who everybody's penciling in for the Super Bowl, which I think is foolish. I think they may not even make it to the playoffs this year. You have the Packers in play with Aaron Rodgers. If he's back, they're going to be good. You got the Detroit Lions with a new head coach and plenty of optimism that he's going to carry some of that Patriots influence, and the Bears are just kind of there, in part because the Bears have just kind of been there, really, ever since the last playoff appearance in 2010, the loss to the Packers in the NFC Championship game. They haven't been back to the postseason. They've been bad more often than they've been good. So I think the national perception is just like, yeah, you know, they're just there. They'll take their lumps. They'll be in fourth place in the division. And I think it's more fair to have an open mind about it. I don't think that it's cause to have, you know, blind optimism, but that's what the NFL loves. Everybody goes to 0-0, and in every city there's a sense of hope that somehow they can piece it all together, even though we know damn well that, you know, a chunk of the teams are going to be terrible this year.
I think it's so important to hear that, right? That we are in this bubble here, and it's easy to listen to Matt Nagy speak every day through the offseason program and soak up the energy he brings and how smart he is offensively, what he can do with Mitch Trubisky. But let's be real, right? And that's what you're saying, Michael. You know, let's be real. Four consecutive double-digit loss seasons. You know, show it to me first. Before they take step forward.
And the NFL is the ultimate zero-sum game. You can't have a winner without a loser. You can't have a good team without a bad team. They play 256 regular season games. Oh, and by the way, this year, the Bears have the Packers, Vikings, and Lions twice. They have the Patriots. They have all the teams of the NFC West. It's not going to be an easy run. But now, this is what you do. It's part of the marketing. It's part of the salesmanship. It's part of the huckstering that every coach is doing, or at least every coach that wants to remain employed is doing, to try to get people excited. So, you know, there's a sense of hope, and then it all comes down to September. For the Bears, I think September is critical. I don't have the schedule in front of me. But, you know, they come out of the first four games 3-1, steal a couple of games that maybe they should lose, build some confidence that way. And then, you know, come Thanksgiving, that they could be a team that you're paying attention to as we go down the stretch.
They'll start at Green Bay Sunday night, Monday night at home against the Seahawks, a rebuilding or restructuring team trying to find a new identity there. They go to Arizona and then home against the Bucks. Definitely a much easier opening run than they had a year ago.
3-1 is not impossible out of that, right?
No, it's not. It really isn't.
And I think one thing about the NFL, at the end of the season, even though they only play 16 games, teams are so much different at the end of the season than they are at the beginning of the season, and part of it is the process of winning. It validates everything that they've gone through. It makes players buy in more. Jacksonville last year, players were upset during training camp, the extent to which they were being beaten up by Doug Marrone's kind of old-school taskmaster ways. But you know what? Once they start winning, they buy in more. And as they buy in, they get better. And I think as you develop confidence, as you develop buy-in, you get better and better and better. And that's why September is going to be critical, especially for a team with a new coach. And it's good they're getting an early start. They'll get the extra preseason game, and they'll be ready to go come week one. And, you know, win or lose to the Packers, I mean, you expect to lose that one, but the next three games, they're all winnable.
Mike, appreciate it as always. Great talking football with you. We'll check again next week.
All right, see you guys.
Mike Florio. Thanks, of Pro Football Talk. You can follow him on Twitter at Pro Football Talk.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.